Welcome to the Political Cesspool Tuesday Night Edition. I'm your host, James Edwards. Austin Farley is not in tonight. He has his priorities straight. He's at a birthday bash for one of his children. And if you've been wondering, if you've noticed lately, Austin's missed about three or four nights, and that is because he has about 12 kids. And so there'll be more missing for him in the future, and that's not a joke. So he's at another birthday bash for his kids tonight. We are lucky to have Jess Bonds in, our regular substitute co-host for a night when Austin and I are out. So it'll be myself and Jess in the cesspool tonight. We got a very special edition of the Political Cesspool tonight. If you're a regular listener of the show, you know when we normally have guests on, we put them in the second and third segment. But I'm happy to announce that we have Bob Whitaker in tonight, and he will be in for the entire 2 hours. He made the trip from Columbia, South Carolina, via Fayetteville, Tennessee, to be with us tonight, and Bob will be in for all of the program tonight. Just one note before we dive into the interview. We have a new phone number now for call-ins. The old number's been changed, so write this down, and we're going to keep the phone lines open all evening tonight, so you can just chime in at any time if you want to get the ear of Bob Whitaker. The number is 872-8862. Again, that's a new phone number tonight for call-ins. 872-8862. We'd appreciate you calling in at any time during the interview tonight. Just really quickly, I'm going to do what Sean Hannity does, and that's read text of what I'm supposed to say. And I'm going to read Bob Whitaker's biography from his website. Bob Whitaker has been there and done that in the world of politics. His unique perspective is insightful and vital. You may not agree with everything he says, but I guarantee that he will make you think. Bob Whitaker was born and raised in South Carolina, where he went to the University of South Carolina and the University of Virginia Graduate School. He has been a college professor, international aviation negotiator, Capitol Hill senior staffer, Reagan administration appointee, and writer for the Voice of America. He has written numerous articles and 2 books. He now lives in Columbia, South Carolina, and Bob is joining us tonight to discuss his latest book, Why Johnny Can't Think. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, sir. I used to work on Capitol Hill, so I feel right at home in a cesspool.
Well, you know, some people like our name, some people don't, but I couldn't think of a name more appropriate that would define American politics as they stand.
There is a more appropriate word for Capitol Hill, but I'm not. You'll lose your license if I repeat it. So.
Well, I got you. But so basically, in your biography, you were actually, as it says, you were among the who's who in Washington. You were all the way up. You worked for Ronald Reagan. What made you kind of slam on the brakes and say, hey, you know, maybe not the two-party system? Maybe that's not the answer for
people. Well, I never was all that big on a two-party system. I wrote a book in 1976 called A Plague on Both Your Houses, which was a plague on both the Republicans and the Democrats.
And that's something we're going to dive into a little bit later in the program. I want to kind of have your voice in and highlight the lack of differences between the two parties. But first of all, let's just blow out the book, first of all, just right off the top of the show. The name of the title pretty much says it all. Why Johnny Can't Think. Bob, why can't Johnny think?
Well, first of all, let me say what this is not. This is not a critique of academia. Every neoconservative writes a critique of academia. This is the demand for throwing those people out of the universities. And let me see, what exactly did you ask me again?
I said, why Johnny can't think, and I guess what I'm asking by that is it just me, or, and you were a college professor, so you're the man to answer this question. Is it just me, or do when people go into these schools, they are bombarded by liberal Marxist professors who indoctrinate kids, and when they get their diploma, they're pretty much no use to society. Is that what the college system is doing?
It's you're making it very ideological, whereas a lot of the things I always say when I talk about is simple, but it ain't easy. And it's simple, but it ain't easy. What you got in charge of the university is a bureaucracy, like any other kind of bureaucracy. In every generation of professors, they pick the ones that fit. That's what tenure, you know, it's been 7 years getting tenure. And so they begin to look more and more alike. And the book goes into this, that what you've got is a bunch of people with the same attitudes. It's an ingrown bureaucracy. Now, any ingrown bureaucracy that chooses itself is going to get worse and worse, and it's going to be bland. It's going to get one line. And I don't see why people think college professors would be any different. College professors decide who's going to be a college professor. They decide who's going to get a degree, who's going to get a PhD. Then you have a 7-year apprenticeship, and you get. Then they decide who's going to get tenure. Then they decide who's going to get published, because the professors run the journals. Now, you take any bureaucracy, any group of human beings, and you make them self-selecting like that, and you're going to end up with a bunch of robots.
Well, and that's pretty much what it is. It seems like, by and large, most college professors have the same kind of political leanings.
Yeah.
And for regular listeners of our show, that certainly contradicts what we try to advocate here in the political cesspool. But now, you were a college professor, so mm-hmm. I don't guess you have many friends among your colleagues.
I'm not one anymore, you'll notice.
So you're not one anymore. So what happened? Can I ask what happened with that? Did you walk away, or
a couple of
did
things.
You get the boot?
Well,
but you think outside of the box. You are a true populist, and you are a man of the people, and you know, obviously, you're not a man who believes he is higher than everyone else, like a lot of these.
Well, I'm an honorary Southie in South Boston. The coal miners, one of the best compliments I ever had. I had this joint march between the people against dirty textbooks, and this is me before you were born, literally. Dirty textbooks in West Virginia, and anti-busing in Louisville and Boston. And when I was walking up, I heard this coal miner who was from West Virginia saying, "I don't see why y'all have so much trouble finding a spokesman. Whitaker speaks for us."
That's right.
And I was so flattered, because I didn't, you know, he didn't know I was coming. And when you get a West Virginia coal miner to trust you, you've got something.
You got a man that knows what work is for a living, and those are the people I believe you have respect for.
Absolutely, yeah. And they, you know, sort of returned it. Like I say, in South Boston, I was declared an honorary Southie despite my accent, or their accent, whatever.
All right. Well, so what happened with your professorship?
Okay.
That's what it's called.
Well, I didn't get my PhD because this was in the free speech '60s. I had in my graduate faculty, I had two professors out of eight who later won Nobel Prizes.
Hmm.
Now, I don't think anybody else can say that. However, I will also point out the University of Virginia got rid of both of them. One of them was my dissertation reader. Both of my dissertation readers were fired because a dean at the University of Virginia, the fellow who was taking over, he said, "I'm going to clean out that nest of right-wingers." And he did. And he fired, you know, everybody in my field, which is public choice.
Now, were you among them?
I was doing my dissertation.
Right, right.
Well, when both of your dissertation readers get fired, and your subject is suddenly in the cesspool, if I may say it.
Right.
You don't get your PhD. In fact, nobody in that class got their PhDs.
Wow. Jess, I know you've got a lot of questions, and you're chomping at the bit over there. You were doing your research on WhitakerOnline.org today. Chime in on this one, and I know you've got some really good questions.
I'd like to follow up a little bit about this book, and one question I'd like to ask Bob is, what is it going to take to eradicate this plague in our so-called institutions of higher education today?
Well, getting off the defensive. People are afraid of professors, even though they talk about the professors this, professors that. We're afraid of them. And we're going to have to find a way to demand that if you go on the campus and you're not a student or a professor, you're not allowed to express your opinion. And yet, here's this professor who's using public money to push his opinions. He's got a full-time job.
That's right.
And he is openly pushing his opinions. The president of George Washington University at commencement last year, he said, this mortarboard they wear on the head, he said, every student moves the little cord from the right to the left, and he said that's what you should do during college education.
And about these professors, You know, if you get that tenure, you're like a lot of these senators and congressmen. If you walk the line and you're politically correct,
yeah,
and you don't shake the boat, you're taken care of for life.
Well, what's taking place in Colorado recently, is that a good example of the problems that we're dealing with?
I don't have it in detail. I know I heard of.
We've got one individual who claims to be a what they now like to say a Native American, when he turned out he had no Indian heritage at all.
Yeah.
His comments about the people in the World Trade Center deserved what they got.
I've read a little bit about this. I'm not well versed in the whole.
But yet, if you have that tenure, you seem to be able to make these kind of comments.
That was a professor that said that.
That's correct, at the University of Colorado.
A professor named Noel Ignatieff. I can't find the quote right now, but I can almost do it off the top of my head. He said, "The abolition of the white race is such a desirable goal that many believe that no one could oppose it except white supremacists." Now, this guy is a professor at Harvard.
This is a professor at Harvard that teaches, you know, children.
What he does, he's got a lifetime job. Now, if any professor of any university or college in America were to say that about any other race, he would be fired so fast, his head would spin, and he'd never get another job.
And that's just the fact of the matter. I mean, it's been proven time and time again. And don't forget, you can be on the line, and we apologize for the change in phone numbers. I know a lot of our callers have it on speed dial.
Sure.
But 872-8862 is the new call-in number if you want to chime in. Bob Whitaker is here live in the studio tonight in Memphis. 872-8862, and you can be on the air with Bob. And let me ask you this as we go on. I'm just trying to get out of the your biographical past before we move into the book in more detail. You actually worked, or Ronald Reagan appointed you to an office or to an administration.
Well, yeah, I was in charge. I was in second in line in charge for all the security clearances for all the civilian employees of the United States government.
Wow.
And also staffing regulations, things like that. So
that was what Reagan appointed you to?
Yeah.
So I mean, we're talking with a guy here, not only an author and a scholar as a professor, but also a guy that worked his way up into the hierarchy of Washington back in the
70s. Well, before that, I had more to do with policy when I was on Capitol Hill.
You were a lawmaker. You wrote laws, right?
Yeah.
So?
Guilty.
I don't guess you wrote any that we'd be at... examining in the cesspool in a negative light.
No. In fact, some of those we stopped.
Is that right? Really?
Oh, yeah. At that time in 1977, Jimmy Carter was in the White House. The Democrats held a majority in both houses. And what we did was, my congressman, John Ashbrook, he and three other guys, one of them would always be there. Now, if you ever listen to congressional debates, whatever, you'll find they always say, with unanimous consent, we'll proceed. Well, if one of those 438 people there says objection, they sit there reading the record, you know, you can kill the session.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. They said, now look, you know, if you put this in, if you don't get this out of there, you're going to be sitting here a long time.
Well, and this is kind of like we're talking about. This was things that you have accomplished, things that you have seen, you've been privy to in the past. Let's fast forward a little bit, and we're going to really dive into some hardcore issues. What is your plan for the future? You've just written the book, Why Johnny Can't Think. You're out on speaking tours, making different appearances, promoting that. Is that what you've determined you can best make an impact?
Yeah, I'm trying to get some basic ideas across. I'm not really trying to, I don't have a complete plan here. But what we need to do, you see, there are two groups of people who are destroying this country. One group is coming across our borders, and you all know about it. But the other stream is coming out of our universities. That is their base.
And that's really destruction from within, because they're taking the youth of America.
That's right.
And we talk about this a lot on this program. I mean, now with taxes, and I personally believe it is a purposeful plan that the government has set in. I mean, both the husband and wife and the dog are working to make ends meet, and that leaves the schools the public schools, the Department of Education, to raise the kids, and then once you get into college, after 20 years of indoctrination, they've got you where you they want you for the rest of your life, and there's no one to stand up and fight against.
Yeah, well, this is kind of at a basic level, because I want people to change their thinking about the universities. Now, I have something here that is sort of basic again, and I say, when I listen to a social, this is from the book, when I listen to a social science professor drone his orthodoxy, I do not think about how I'm offended by his opinions. I spent a lifetime in politics. Listening to silly-ass drivel doesn't bother me. What I resent is not the professor's opinions. I resent his lunch. I paid for it. I resent his suit. I paid for it. I resent his shoes. I paid for them. I resent paying for this dribble.
And that's a good point, because that's what people don't understand.
Yeah, this is...
That they're paying for their own destruction.
I know people who have gone to prison for using public monies for political purposes.
Yes.
And yet we have a whole group of people here who have devoted these whole institutions and this monopoly they have for no particular reason. And it is a monopoly. You have to have a college degree. And all a professor has to do for the public is sign a piece of paper.
That's right.
He doesn't have to even show up for lectures, really.
And they make people believe that they've got to have these degrees and they've got to go through this course of indoctrination in order to make it in America.
Right.
Herb, can we take that call? Hold on. I guess people... If you're trying to call in the program tonight, and again, this is our first night with the new number. I know that's going to confuse a lot of people, and we apologize. But the call-in number is 872-8862, 872-8862, and you can be on the line with Bob Whitaker, 872-8862. Bob, let me ask you this, and this is something I hijacked your saying here, and I use it on the show frequently.
That's what it's for.
I hope you won't charge a copyright fee.
That's what it's for, man.
Let's talk about the state religion, and I want you to kind of spell that out.
Yeah.
Political correctness.
Okay, now what I say in the book, again, is not what the average, you know, what really makes me tired is when somebody says, well, I read your book and I tell you, the professors are biased. You know, well, whoopee, you know. What'd you just ask me?
What did I ask you? I was asking you to kind of lay out the point on...
Oh, yeah, political correctness.
And why it's dangerous.
All right, now, it's not that it's... Now, listen. First of all, when preachers and when the private schools, religious schools, start arguing with the government, they always say, well, we want to teach religion. But what they always concede to the other side is that the other side isn't teaching religion.
Right.
Political correctness fulfills every requirement of a religion. And what I mean is, you could take that to court.
Well, and what it really...
That's why I go into detail in the book to prove that political correctness is a religion.
So you're not necessarily saying that it wouldn't be beneficial for someone to go to college. Obviously, with the way America is structured, they put a lot of value on these degrees, but... You got to be careful on what on how far you swallow the sinker. Is that what you're saying? I mean, you don't want to go in there.
I think we need to get in there and either take away their monopoly. And I talk in this book about the academic priesthood. That's what I call them. They are the priests of this religion called political correctness. It is a religion by definition.
Right.
And I point out, you know, religions aren't always like, you know, Christianity, Judaism, that sort of thing. They include any faith, pure faith.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I was talking about getting into court on that. But I'll get back to
that. Well, I lose my train of thought more than anybody possibly could. So
well, I got a 40 years more excuse than you have.
Let me chime in a moment. How much does the political system protect this plague? I talked to chancellors. I'll mention one, like at the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville, who was appointed by a so-called conservative Baptist governor. He was a former Baptist minister. And at this social gathering I was at, this chancellor let it be known that quite blatantly he had a liberal agenda, and he was targeting certain professors, and that certain structures were going to be followed and certain guidelines that was going to completely change the makeup at the University of Arkansas. How is that prevalent everywhere?
Well, this is another part of my... There's a lot of information in this little book and a lot of points that you know, are, that everybody is welcome to steal. You know, that's what they're for. But the best writing in here, I hate to say this, is the foreword by Joe Sobra. It's 2 pages long. He says a large part of what I took about 100 pages to say.
He's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, he's an old buddy of mine. He, by the way, I want you to know this book is, as we say in Pontiac, South Carolina, the book is short, it's big print, and your lips will not get tired.
And that's really true, and that's what I want to say. And I've told you on the car ride over here that our subscribers to the Political Cesspool mailing list, which anyone can join at thepoliticalcesspool.org, they are really taken by the book, and we've had just, they've been flying off the shelf, so to speak, even though there is no shelf, but... and it is an easy book to read, and it's a lot of short stories, and it just really makes you think point by point on a lot of different things. And I know I'm a reader that likes that. I don't like to get into a chapter that's, you know, 112 pages long. Right, that's it.
Well, I'm actually, believe it or not, going back to the point you made, and here is you were talking about this conservative that appointed this
right
guy. Okay.
So-called conservative.
All right. Sobran says, Whitaker is at his funniest and most scathing when he discusses the liberals' most valuable ally, the respectable conservative, whose role is to reinforce liberalism by treating it with respect. This respect is what makes him respectable. That is, welcome in the media as liberalism's loyal opposition. The conservative who gives liberalism the horse laugh it deserves quickly forfeits any hope of being invited back. Whitaker long since ceased being invited back.
Well, and you bring up a point that I know people like Jess and I, we're always talking about. I have no more disdain for any group of people on the earth than I do for moderate or neoconservatives, however you want to land.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anybody more dangerous in the world than people like Sean Hannity and George Bush, who...
Bennett.
Despite all of this...
Oh,
see, they've got our people wrapped up.
Yeah.
They've got our people wrapped up, and people think that, okay, these people wear the white hats, Gore and Kerry and Clinton wear the black hat, and that's the only two options we have. When you get down to it, besides maybe a little bit of rhetoric where they differ on issue, these guys... agree on everything.
But you see, Jesse Jackson is able to have a program called Both Sides. You know, it's sort of like the the Communist Party having a hallelujah chorus, because nothing important, they disagree on nothing important. In fact, the conservatives, in order to keep their credentials, are desperate to prove that they're for everything that is really serious to liberal, and many of the liberal, and I tell you something, they never laugh at liberals.
You know what? I hadn't seen that. You make a good point. I want people to think about that for a minute. You know, they will try to debate with these people as if some of their schemes are serious. Mm-hmm. Say,
George Bush's kinder, gentler nation. I think that's
this whole thing. Look, homosexual marriage. The fact that they're having a debate with these people over that. There should be no debate. You know, this is it's a sickness, and we don't want that in America. And the fact that they will allow a respectable debate, as Bob says, makes them respectable conservatives. And
the oldest trick in the book is to control the opposition. Man, that goes back 2,000 years. I mean, that's not like it's new.
Well, and that's basically what we're saying here. And this is what I've been saying ever since I got my start working for Pat Buchanan, is that I was able to see, at least in my heart and with my eyes, and people, a lot of people don't see the world the way I do, but the Republicans and Democrats are the mainstream Republicans controlled opposition, when in fact they are all part of the same team. And I'll take it a step further. As a way for you to answer that question, We bring up this point a lot. The Democrats would have never been able to pass the Patriot Act. They needed Bush
certainly
for that. Elaborate on that a little bit. I mean, just
I can't really elaborate on it. I think when you have something called the Patriot Act, it sounds like something straight out of 1984 to start with. I mean, you know, the New World Order and the Patriot Act. I mean, this is something out of 1984.
Well, and that's what we're talking about. Do you think that had Gore proposed that? I could have just seen the wailing and gnashing of teeth. I could have seen, you know, Republicans driving up in their pickup trucks to Washington to protest this. But then Bush does it.
Mm-hmm.
Bush does it. And I think, well, you know, he's the conservative. He's mm-hmm. the Republican. I mean, I don't necessarily.
Well, it's not like this is a new trick. Like,
yeah, well, it's
controlling the opposite. Well, the way they do it, for example, again, I talked about professors of bureaucracy. Basically, leftism is just the idea that. And I know it's going to bring a lot of people down. Leftism is just the idea that professors should rule the world. Think about it. Like Marxism, I have it in here. Marx never did a day's work in his life.
Yeah.
Neither did Trotsky, neither did Engels, neither did any of these people. None of them ever did a day's work in their life. Their idea was that, and I go into this in detail in the book, that their idea was that the intellectuals were going to plan the economy. The intellectuals going to run things. The dictatorship of the proletariat. The proletariat was the ones they're going to take care of, but they weren't going to have anything to do with it.
And the intellectuals are also the ones that are too good to actually work.
The professors love that idea. And
I can attest to that.
Yeah. And so what you call leftism isn't so much a plot as it is just what a bureaucracy would come up with. I mean, it's so simple.
Now, are these people also responsible for the... I guess they'd have to be, the text of what these people are learning in colleges. We were talking about professors. I mean, are they directly over the curriculum, or are they just in cahoots with the people that are?
They're writing it in most cases, aren't they, Bob?
If that's the case.
But it doesn't matter, because they're all just alike anyway. By the time I just got through saying, they get 4 years of college, 3 years to get their doctor's degree, 7 years to get their tenure. And they have to toe the line the whole time, and there's a lot of competition, so the ones who make it, and publish or perish, and every article, it has to be published by another professor, you got yourself a bunch of robots.
And that's exactly what it is.
Doesn't matter which one plans the curriculum, you know, one of them could go to sleep and the other one could do it.
And that's the thing, and then after these people get their college degree, after enduring this and walking the line in order to graduate, I mean, you don't see a lot of, and I say this as it is meant to be said, you don't see a lot of patriots coming out of colleges and universities anymore.
No, of course not.
Those that do have really been tested. They've been put to the torch test.
And
no
I know
doubt.
You have a wife that's in education. And
yes, and I remember my days of college. This is bringing back a lot of memories of some of the things that I had to experience as well. Yes.
But,
well, you were talking about the economics, Bob, and how much, too, we talked a little bit about the political influences on this system and then the way they tenure themselves in, but economics plays a big role in them being able to maintain this.
Well, we pay for it. That's why I just got through writing. I mean, we take a bunch of people. Now, you would never do this. No sane person would do this with any bureaucracy. You take a bunch of people, you say, you select each other, and here's $1 billion.
All right.
And here's 1 million kids.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bob, with that, we're going to hold up. We've got to take our first commercial break. We have a few bills to pay around here. Not a lot, but just enough to make us have to take these breaks. Remember, and I apologize again, the number has changed. It's 872-8862. Give us a call on the other side of this break. You can be on live with author of Why Johnny Can't Think, Bob Whitaker. 872-8862, and check us out on the website at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. A very special edition of the program tonight. We have Bob Whitaker in for the full 2 hours. We'll be back with the second segment of tonight's program right after these commercial breaks. Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. We're here with special guest Bob Whitaker, author of the book Why Johnny Can't Think. And again, we've had a little bit of phone discrepancies tonight. The new number to call in for the studio, and I know during the break we had several callers trying to get on that were still on the old number. The new number is 872-8862. Do we have a caller, Herb? All right, we do have a caller on the air.
Absolutely. You got the most important column.
No. All right. What do we got going on?
I love modesty.
Absolutely. Mr. Whitaker, this is Austin Farley, the other half of the principal. I appreciate you being in tonight. I'm sorry I'm not in there with y'all. I just have a family obligation.
Well, that's the most important thing in the world, boss.
Absolutely. I sure hate that I miss you. I'm sure y'all are having a blast in there. I hate that we're having a little phone trouble. That's not good.
Yeah, because I had a couple of calls during the break, and there was people trying to get on, and they were still down on the old numbers. So at least we've run the trial run here. We know that it works. You did dial 872-8862, correct?
Obviously, I did, or I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
That's right. Yeah, Herbert's getting it worked out in there. All right, so that's the number.
Good deal.
All right, at least you got that test.
Let's get back to me.
You going back to the birthday blowout?
Yeah, I'm going back. I just wanted to tell Mr. Whitaker I apologize for missing him tonight, and I look forward to seeing him in the near future, and everybody in Memphis. I'll be back in there tomorrow. So
your loss is my gain, Austin.
Keep us up. Y'all have a good night, all right?
Thanks, buddy. All right, so that works. 872-8862. So all the callers out there, 872-8862, please tell me that's on the right line. It's the other line.
It's Austin gone.
All right, 872-8862, and that is not the number we've been giving out. 872-8862, call that number to be on the line. All right, let's get back to the book. They're going to have to figure that out. 872-8862.
Man, this feels like the federal government.
We run it about as efficiently in the studio, don't we, Bob?
Prime example of how the government works right here tonight on the political cesspool.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it out one more time. 872-8862, let's get back on the book.
What do you got? I wanted to say something about when I was in Washington. One thing that saved what sanity I've got left is I used to have a sign what Oliver Hardy used to say about his... Oliver Hardy, by the way, is from Augusta, Georgia. And they asked him about his character and what was so funny about it. And he said, "There's nothing as dumb as a dumb man who thinks he's smart."
And that's what a lot of these people are. Not only their professors. Would it be too bold of me to say that a lot of these professors are dumb?
Yeah.
You know, they got the PhD. They've got all their credentials.
You asked me tonight what I thought of Sean Hannity, and I said, he's dumb. I met him.
You have met him. Right, we're going to talk about that in a second, then, because I know Jess is jealous about that. At 872-8862, we've got a caller.
You mean I finally got through?
You finally got through. I think you finally dialed the new number at 872-8862.
I mean, y'all had to change the number without giving me information on it.
Well, I didn't know it either until I got here, buddy. But what do you got? You got a question for Bob?
What's up, Bob?
Huh?
Y'all had Austin call in before me.
Austin heard the number, I guess. Do you have a question? Do you have a question for us tonight?
No, I was just calling in.
All right.
Hey. I forgot what we were talking about, and I forgot the question I was going to ask.
I know that
feeling. That happened a lot.
I know that feeling. Well, believe me, I just forgot where I was going twice or three times tonight.
Well, I know. Well, look, I'm going to
ask. I just got a question, though.
Okay, go ahead.
What do y'all think of the mistrial and the O.C. Smith?
We can't talk about that tonight because that's a local issue and Bob doesn't know what you're talking about.
All right.
Let me ask you a question really quick.
I got you another one.
Hey, if it's got to be national, it needs to be dealing with...
This one is national.
Okay.
Well, what do y'all think of the gesture of the BTK killer? The guy out of Wichita, Kansas.
All right, listen, Justin, I got to ask you a question really quickly because I know you, your voice. You came to our fundraiser. You're in... A public college. What do you think of your professors? Are they liberals?
I don't know. They're about equal.
Got it. All right.
But what do y'all think of the capture of the BTK? I haven't
heard anything about that. You're confusing me and Bob. We got to go.
Y'all know who the BTK killer is?
No, but we'll find out later. But we appreciate your call.
He must be going to Ole Miss.
Yeah. He's in the condition I was in college.
That's why I think he's going to Ole Miss.
Man, let me tell you something. You have got to, if you want true misery, you have got to teach basic economics at 8 a.m. on Monday when you and the whole class are hungover.
Bob, getting back to your book, you were talking about how these individuals get in, and then they set the criteria, they come up with the books, and they pretty much run the show. And once they get so firmly established, they can pretty well filter out individuals who are trying to get into schools, can't they?
Well, they knocked my old faculty out.
Not only the potential teachers, but students as well.
Sure. Nothing is easier than bullying people from, believe me, I had to avoid it. If you're up in front of the class, nothing is easier than bullying students. So you don't really have to keep them out. You can just keep them cowed.
Well, I remember how petrified I was, particularly that first semester. And they would point their fingers at me. I'd just go,
Yeah.
And
Nothing easier in the world than to be a bully from the...
Well, and a lot of people I am that age, but impressionable, right? And this plays a role. This plays a part in that.
Well, anybody...
Part of their, conforming into what the professors...
The mold
that they're giving out.
By definition, anybody who is in an inferior position when you're in your class.
Right.
You've got people practically hiding under their chairs to keep them. You know it.
And you're not going to go up and you're going to be inclined to just kind of tote the line. So much importance has been put on that degree. And you're going to tote the line, especially if you don't have firm convictions one way or the other. You're just going to say, they're telling me this social experimentation's good. I guess it is.
Well, I got to mention two things before my book. My book team, all of this, by the way, all our people are volunteer. But he also tends to kill me if I don't get to the point. Our site for the book is readbob.com.
Readbob.com, and I believe we have a caller at 872-8862. Caller, you're on the air. We lost that caller at 872-8862. Yeah. So you got an all-volunteer staff. And I know
this is one of them right here.
And that's a Spartan's job. Because I don't think I've ever been paid for anything.
Yeah, I know the feeling, yeah.
So, all right, we do have a caller. All right, the caller's back at 872-8862. Thank you for tuning in tonight. You're on the air with Bob Whitaker. Caller, you're on the air.
This is Joe Maddox. I was just reading an article from a Grady McWhitney, a member of the League of the South, about Jefferson Davis being our greatest hero, and to tie in with a lot that I've been reading about professors that are degrading the South, that our old-timey Southern values and beliefs are forgotten. You can't be teaching things positive about the South. And he made a comment. He said, "What passes for standard American history is Yankee history written by New Englanders or their puppets to glorify Yankee ideals and heroes." And I was just wondering if your guest might comment about that.
Well, I'm from South Carolina. Of course I've got a comment about that. My sister, this sounds a little roundabout, but I'm old, so. My sister moved into a real rich community, and she began to be anti-gun because they were dirty old noisy things and this upper class and all that. Then in the Columbia paper there, they announced that she and her husband, that two thugs had busted into the place and beat the hell out of both of them. And her attitude towards guns changed. And I used to work in a prison. And the cons sit around talking about rich communities without guns, the way that insurance agents talk about insurance prospects. They're looking for somebody who's bragging about the fact we got lots to steal and no guns. And so I was tracing back where this comes from, and I said, now, she's listening to these rich people around her. These rich people and their parents learned all their politics from their professors, and their professors were from Podunk U, and they looked at these Harvard professors like gods.
Mm-hmm.
And so when somebody like Dershowitz, he's several things, but anyway, what I'm saying is, see, that this also filters down, this New England attitude, and so Podunk U hears it, and it spreads out. But it's still Podunk U. It's basically just obedience, just like the
state paper in South Carolina has something in it, well, you, if you just read the New York Times the week before, you'd know where it came from.
About the same thing.
Yeah.
It filters down.
So there's the problem is conservatives act like this is respectable.
Mm-hmm.
They don't laugh at it. They don't make fun of it.
The respectable conservatives, and we're talking about the neocon, really liberal.
Talking about everybody. Who is owned, you don't get on the media unless you're respectable.
Okay, well, and you're right. You're exactly
here
right. And because of, you know, if we were on the media, if you had a mainstream show, or if I had a show that was going out like Hannity and Combs.
Or if a bullfrog had wings.
Yeah, right, there you go. But, I mean, wouldn't we be railing? I mean, wouldn't we be trying to together
yeah.
protest? I mean,
well,
these people
thing, I'd be laughing my tail off. Every time I came up with it. Look. Give me a professor for lunch, and I'll eat him. Let me tell you something. My enemies know how dangerous I am. Now, I used to run committee meetings and things like that where we'd go nose to nose. I was on campuses. I wrote two books before, and both of them were given good reviews, despite the fact they hated my politics. Both of them were given great reviews by Publishers Weekly, by Kirkus. Both of them were recommended by the Library Journal for
right.
purchase.
Right.
This one, I couldn't get it published, and one publisher thought, my gosh, look, we got this big-time author here. We really got us a deal.
Right.
And we got him, and 1 month later, he wrote back and said, not only are we not publishing this book, we are destroying all correspondence relating to it.
Now, that's powerful.
Now, I have had many, many, many rejection slips in my life, but I've never had one straight out of George Orwell like that.
They're just going to burn any trace they ever had tied to you.
They were going to wipe it off their computer.
Joe, do you have, did that satisfy your question? Are you still on the line with us?
I think he's gone, but I'd like to make a point to follow up on what he was saying.
Let me just give out the number one more time, because I know we had another call on the other line. 872-8862 if you want to get on the political cesspool with Bob Whitaker. 872-8862.
Let me mention readbob.com.
Readbob.com. And I want to talk, Jess, I don't want to cut. Go ahead and say what you got to say, because I want to get back on what he just mentioned.
Well, I thought the caller brought up a very good point. Now, it brought to mind what a professor taught me in an African-American history course, no less, in college, that the story between the lion and the hunter, how it comes out is who's telling the story.
Yeah.
And in regards to Southern history, was certainly the victor goes the spoils, and their version is the one that's so prevalent.
Well, so often in wars, the winner is good, the loser is bad, and that's just the way
that's
it is.
Right.
You know, and it doesn't matter if it's right or wrong. Some cases it's right, some cases it's wrong, but that's just the way it always comes out.
Here is an example, again, of controlling our opposition. Remember, he's talking about the...
Bob, we got a caller at 872-8862. Call it, and I hate to hold you up, especially when we get going, but caller, you're on the air with Bob Whitaker.
Thank you. Bob, your whole concept of moving the barometer, you know, the assumption that because someone has a type of title gives them instant credibility, that's what we've got to do away with first. We've got to change the argument, not argue with them.
You got it.
If I could give you an affirmation of what you're talking about briefly, sir, many years ago, this is over 20 years ago, I was attending Memphis State, as it was called then, the local college there, and I had a history teacher, and, you know, I was pretty naive, and I thought, well, you know, my first time to vote was President Reagan's second run, and I voted for him. I feel like he was he's been a role model to me. And I just assumed... Of course, you know, assumption is the mother of all screw-ups, that anyone intelligent enough to be a professor had to be voting for President Reagan. Boy, did I have a lot to learn. And, so I went to take a makeup test at this professor's personal office, and he was a fascinating person to listen to lecture, you know, because I didn't know any better. Evidently, it didn't work if he was trying to mold my thinking. But the point is, I went down to his office, and he had one entire wall had a huge mural. It's at least 30 feet long. And remember the old Coca-Cola mural that had the white stripe over red?
Yeah.
Well, it had that. It had a picture of Lennon, and I don't mean John Lennon.
Right.
I mean, this
yeah.
guy was a, I mean, he was a professed communist.
Sure.
And you know what? I think we'd be much better off if they would, more of them would just go ahead and let's just not sugarcoat it, guys. Don't call yourself a progressive or a Democrat. And this applies to a lot of the neocons too. And I call Sean Herring a red herring, Sean Hannity a red herring farmer, because he just gets arguments going with no real dialogue.
Yeah.
But they ought to just go ahead, you know, put the hammer and sickle, you know, fly it proudly, wear it on an armband, and be who you are. Don't pretend you're something you're not.
Well, you have to keep in mind that a lot of the reason they don't is who's the McCain. For example,
John McCain and the insane McCain posse.
Well, see, as McCain does, is better than a liberal senator would be for the liberals.
Oh yeah.
He you're right back to controlling the opposition.
Sure, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Yeah, and but he's very useful to them because, like, even with gun control, which is wildly unpopular in Arizona, still. He carried the water just as much as he could on what they could get. You
That's
see?
Exactly. You know, we got to close this gun show loophole there, Bob.
Right. Well, I was up there. I was on Capitol Hill. I've been through
I
this.
I think
game.
Hillary would make a great president.
Yeah. Well, never happened, Cam.
Let's hope not.
Well, we talk about that. Oh, my goodness.
She's just too cold, you know.
But there you go, McCain. McCain is probably more dangerous than any.
Oh yeah.
Than anyone on the
most destructive people are the kept opposition. Now, what I was that earlier gentleman, because being from South Carolina is a big thing to me. He was talking about the Southern thing. You see, they control our Southern faculties.
Right.
And so they control. There is no opposition, no argument for the South, because the professor priesthood has a unanimous opinion about this.
You know what they remind me of? There's one analogy that fits pretty well. In one of the Star Trek television series, there's a race or species called the Borg, and they have they're many individuals, but they have one collective thought, one collective
right.
mind.
Yes.
And that is to say, Dan Rather is Hillary Clinton, is Michael Moore, is John McCain. I mean, they're no different.
Well,
you know, they really are not capable of individual thought.
Well, compared to two professors, they are different. I mean, professors come out of cookie cutter, absolute cookie cutter. And it is, if you look at it, it couldn't have happened any other way. You can't take a bureaucracy, leave it to choose itself, and not end up with a bunch of cookie cutters.
Now, Bob, could we? Do you think this could be traced back to Khrushchev's warning in the early 1960s when he banged that shoe on the podium and says, "We'll take America without firing a shot"? Could we say that they've been successful in capturing academia?
No, they captured it long before that. It was well on its way because it's just not that mysterious a thing. You know, they like a philosophy that says that professors should rule the world. They're largely Eastern oriented. It's not really all that deep a thing.
Well, these schools aren't about education
anymore.
Well, Eastern,
I take it you mean Northeastern, the center of hypocrite elitism.
I'd use other words, but again, the station has a license here. Yeah.
Well, you know, you do have to keep it clean for SEC
right,
purposes.
Yeah.
And I tell you what,
there's a lot more honest descriptions that I might use among my friends.
But, well, there you go.
Let me mention readbob.com again, and let me mention whitakeronline.org, not .com.
Will do, because I'd like to learn more about your background.
Okay.
Evidently, you're very credible. You're the type of intellectual conservative that they fear.
Yeah.
That they obviously are attempting to.
They know better than our people do how dangerous I am. And I will have, if anybody wants to debate me, you know, I'll take them on. I'll have
We might have some of those. We appreciate this call. And,
I hope you get one, because they're probably going to be strong for that battle of wits. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. And it seems like our phone lines are burning up. Remember, the line to get on. is now 872-8862. And as we had our last caller on, I could hear the other phone line, our old line, burning up. That doesn't go into the studio anymore. If you want to be on the phone with Bob Whitaker, the number is 872-8862. 872-8862. We've got a few more minutes before our next commercial break, so give us a call if you want to get on pretty quickly. And we do have a call right now, as I spoke, at 872-8862. We got to kind of saturate that number tonight. Do we have a caller, Herbert? Caller, are you on the air with Bob Whitaker?
Yeah, this is Joe Maddox again. I appreciate all your comments that you made, and I agree with all of it. I think the old saying from the 80s, I think it was the 80s, was that we got 50,000 1960s comedies, I mean comedies, yeah, comedy radicals, and they went to college and they never left. You remember that
Actually, you have almost quoted my book. I said in there that a liberal, a leftist, is a person who has not outgrown his college education.
That is
exactly what you just said, and that's a quote from the book.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So great minds think alike.
Well, of course, and since I haven't read the book, and on the information here, I'll be sure to get one from Mr. Edwards.
Well, that's right, because we do offer it on thepoliticalcesspool.org, or you can get them directly from Mr. Whitaker at readbob.com.
Well,
so we're trying to get them out.
The big thing about readbob.com, since this station is doing it, you know, I'd rather them sell the book, but you can get it to readbob.com, at least it's easy to remember. But there, my team is there, and we're trying to organize some actual action. And that is the important side of this, you know. We don't know exactly what to do yet.
But I'll tell you why, and we've spoken about this before, and I've told this to a lot of people, is that you've got to educate first and foremost. You've got to educate or you don't know who the enemy is. And after you get that, now, education will only take yourself so far, but I think through enlightenment, you can get a bunch of people together, and the solution will present itself. But you got to know.
They have some good flyers that could be put on campus, and that one thing. Now I've done this a lot. Like I say, I had several thousand people marching in Washington. In fact, I was the one who came up with the independent trucker strike. They need one to know how to get attention in Washington. I said take those great big old trucks and park them on the bridge at 8 o'clock in the morning.
You're behind
that's
that.
What they did. Yeah,
I know. Her signaling at me. We appreciate the caller. We got to go to a station ID and a commercial break. But when we come back, again the number.
And I'm being repetitive tonight. 872-8862. You can be on the line with Bob Whitaker. I don't think 2 hours is going to be enough tonight, but we're thankful to have Bob in for the entire program tonight. So he will be back for the next hour and final hour of tonight's broadcast. And again, you can catch him at 872-8862. We'll be back after these quick messages from our sponsors.